Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. This is another episode of Lucha World. This is Vandal the Love Handle Drummond, who is a total klutz when it comes to any kind of recording apparatus. And I am here with a guy who makes sure I do it right, Alfredo Esparza.
The guy in agreement.
That's right. He's nodding in agreement. Yeah. This is something that we were discussing on the first take of this podcast, is that he nods in agreement when he knows I'm doing something ridiculous, and he shakes his head vehemently when he knows I'm continuing to do things.
We're probably going to have to do this over the phone again.
Yeah,
poor Superboy's going to be calling like an hour.
It's definitely working this time. Now, we're here with the longtime legend of Los Angeles wrestling, Superboy, who I was looking through photos that I took of you in 1989 in San Bernardino Arena for Red Bastien's Win promotion. And what I'll never forget about that day is that was the first time I actually really saw you in action, aside from your debut in 1987. And you blew a lot of minds with your flying then. Then Dan Farron also reminded me that that day was not just the first day I ever snapped pictures of you, but it's the first day that I met Dan Farron, Johnny Legend, Broadway Danny Wolf, and Pat Hoed, as you just reminded me. And
who's Pat, Larry Rivera?
Larry Rivera, the renowned XPW announcer. And in fact, in the photo of you doing the backflip with Principe Ndu, your big bro, you see Pat Hoed in the background with a finger up in the air, probably saying, "Dude!" And as I think I gave away already, this is our second take of this interview. We were a few minutes into it, but the most famous story about you working with the Wynn promotion was your paycheck. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, it's my famous paycheck. We waited up until like 3 o'clock in the morning just to get paid.
Oh, jeez.
We walk up to this window.
How long was the taping for that show? Was it...
Yeah, it was. They did but you know, they had us like
just waiting there.
Like in any other promotion, when they went come time to pay, I remember going out to TJ and getting like waiting till like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning just to get paid, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, we went up to this little window and we were there, and you know, everybody got their check, and I didn't really notice at the time, to be honest. And I grabbed it and I looked at it. And I was about to put it on my wallet. Wait a minute, it's a Superboy right here. And then I tell my brother, "Hey, bro, let me see your check." And it's a Capitan Oro. I go, "What the hell? Where are we gonna change these, man?" But that's not the worst part of it.
Yeah.
When they finally gave us a legit check with our name, we went to our local supermarket to change the checks, and they bounced. Oh, man.
Quite a lesson in your rookie years. Yeah. I think you had been wrestling, about 2 years at that time?
Yeah, it's just about.
I remember, I didn't realize it until later, but Fisico and I actually saw your debut match in San Bernardino 2 years earlier, where it was you, and I don't remember who you were teaming with, but it was against Los KKK.
Yes, Los KKK, it was it was the same guy both of the times I wrestled.
Mm-hmm.
First, he wrestled as Centella Roja.
I remember him from the Hancock
Wazzles. Juan Rojas. He was one of my padrinos. And the second time around, I wrestled him under the Niño Asesino.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. So, and I remember, and that's when I actually got my name. You know, it's funny because I was still training at the time. I was way ahead of my time, and I remember somebody not showing up for the show. And Sergio Platalito Garcia comes up to me and says, "Hey, dude, you know, we need one more, you know. Why don't you suit up?" And like, "Well, dude, I don't even have, suit up with what? I don't have anything." "Oh, just go to the back, you know, sparring from the guys." Like, "Oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to wrestle." Then I remember my dad coming up to me and saying, "Dude, in this life, we have to do a little bit of everything except being gay." I said, "All right, you know," but it's luckily the guy showed up. So anyways,
yeah,
I didn't wrestle that day, but after the show was over, I remember Patanito crouching down, you know, doing his show for next week, and you know, he calls up my dad and he goes, "Okay, so I'm booking your son next week. So what are we gonna call him?" My dad said, "Oh, just put Superboy." I said, "Oh, wait a minute, I don't like that name." And I just, "Tú ponle Superboy," and that's it.
And the name stuck?
Yeah, the name stuck. Yeah.
That's very
You know, after Gil wanted to change it like five times.
Were there any, what were those names that he wanted to change them to?
Actually, he never liked the idea of me calling me Superboy.
Yeah.
So he, back in Jaco Plaza, there was this one wrestling car called Spartan Boy.
Oh, jeez.
Remember Spartan Boy?
Now, when you said your dad says you have to do everything but being gay, now Spartan Boy sounds really gay.
I know.
And everybody should try everything once. So did you try being gay?
No. It was Spartan Boy. So Gil said, "I got a name for you. You're gonna call yourself Spartano."
Mm-hmm.
Like Spartan, like...
Yeah, that's not that bad, you know.
You know, I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So, you know, I had somebody, it wasn't Antonio, it was, remember that guy used to wrestle as Beethoven?
Puerto Rico. Carlos.
Yeah, so he had, he made my first mask.
And, did Beethoven wrestle with that little, like, wig?
Oh, that would have been cool if he did.
No, he didn't. He had a mask with, like, some musical notes on it.
Yes.
I remember
that's
that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And, he made the mask for me. I can't remember if it was him or Antonio. I can't remember. So anyways, I wrestled a couple of times with that name. I didn't like it. He had me working as a baby face.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, you know, I wanted to be a heel. And, and I worked good as a face. But, I didn't feel comfortable.
Right.
I just wanted to go out and explode and do what I do, and you know, I wanted to change everything up, and you know, and a lot of people didn't agree with it because they have it was still old school, you know.
Yes.
you had to follow that way of wrestling. And as a matter of fact, I remember later on in, I think it was like 93 or 94.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like 93, 94. I got to wrestle Liz Mark.
Very nice.
Liz Mark, it was at one of Antonio's show. Liz Mark, Corsario de Plata.
Yes.
And Triton against Gran Marcus, mm-hmm, Jr., Gordy Chavez, and myself. So anyways, you know, and I went in there and I did my stuff and I jumped and I did all these kinds of stuff. And that was me. That was just me.
Yeah.
And I remember after the show, Les Mark pulling me to the side and he goes, "Hey, you know what? You're a really good wrestler, but you got to make up your mind. You're either a heel or you're a babyface. You know, for a heel... you're too much of a baby face. You do all these nice stuff.
The high flying and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you gotta, you know, tone it down. And if you want to be a ruler, you have to tone it down. You know, I took in the advice. I thanked them, you know. And, you know, that's one thing that's really, that got me through in this business. That, you know, you take criticism from everybody and you take it in good.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, that's just being humble. You know, you don't turn around and disrespect the people. And, you know, especially when it's coming from somebody that's been in the business for a while.
Yes, and had some success.
Who's that you
said? Liz Mark.
Liz Mark, yes.
Not hijo de Liz Mark.
Whole different ballgame. Anyway. Oh,
that would have been different, though.
Yeah. Now, you know, we were briefly mentioned a few minutes ago at Jaco Plaza. And I have to say, before I knew you, I went to my first Jaco Plaza show in 1981. And I was blown away. Never have I ever seen a better organized independent promotion with quality wrestling from the opening match. What I loved about the opening matches were you had guys doing really solid holds, but they weren't doing these high spot fests. They weren't trying to upstage the main eventers. It was a really disciplined show. And when I went to my first show, you were probably in the arena the same night, but you're probably like, what, 10 or 11?
Yeah, just about. I was about 11 years old.
Yeah, and, you know, your father was the wrestler, the late El Moro, who was hell of a worker and hell of a guy. And just tell us kind of what was it like, you know, coming to Los Angeles and, you know, being a little kid with your father, being a part of the pioneering L.A. Lucha scene.
Well, you know what? I really have to say it. I don't want to give my dad a lot of props, but, you know, I remember it was like back in, I want to say as back as 74, because I know my younger brother wasn't born. And I remember walking into La Arena Center that was located in East L.A., right on Whittier, one block away from Arizona. And it was this old theater. And as you walked in, you know, where they sell the concession stand, where they sell the popcorn and everything, they had the little dolls, the wrestling dolls, and the mascaras. And I remember every time walking in, asking my dad to buy me a mascara or buy me a doll. And I never, qué mascara de qué bonito, vámonos, cabrón. So, anyways, I remember watching Al Murrieta. Yes. And Al Murrieta caught my eye because he was a really hard wrestler, and I remember he would grab his opponents and he would, you know, clench his fist and bam, bam, like two or three punches, boom, and then he would let him go. And, you know, the guy was, you know, dying over here, and then he would look into the crowd and he would pull out his teeth. He would pull out his teeth and he started poking this guy in the forehead. And the guy was screaming and yelling. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Al Murrieta. That guy was... He probably won't go down in history, but he should, because that guy was an amazing wrestler.
Yeah, and he was for the longest time. You know, I'm pretty sure he was still living here. He will probably still be wrestling.
Whenever I look at Al Murrieta, I think of those old spaghetti western flicks of Sergio Leone, and you'd see Clint Eastwood in a gun battle with these just nasty looking dudes, and I said, Al Murrieta looks like he'd be one of those nasty dudes. Only difference is he would kill Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood would not win this match.
And the other guy I remember was Jody Chavez,
because
he used to come out in this gorilla outfit, and I can't remember. I think it was Gorilla Chavez or something like that. And the other person was this old. He was old even back then. Moikan Bull or something. I think his name was. He had the gimmick of an Indian.
Yeah.
And he would just sit down in the corner and crouch and be there for like 10 minutes and meditating and.
Oh, trip out!
Yeah, it was
That's
funny.
My kind of gimmick.
It was funny. It was really cool. I used to like it back at the time, but those are the people that I remember. And the promotion was not that all that good. You know, it lacked promotion, and it lacked the you know, people just taking control over that place. And I remember my dad having conversations with Gil at Gil's Garage as to opening up a new place. And I remember this one call by the name of Pendulion. He used to visit Gil a lot. So they all got together, and I can't remember who found the place, but I remember going with my dad to check out the place. This was back in 78. Back in 78, we went to go check out this place, and it was the legendary Jatco Plaza.
Yes.
And like I said a while ago, not to put my dad over or anything, but thanks to his promotion skills and his matchmaking skills, that place really, really went over. I remember my dad had a few friends from Budweiser, so he had like Budweiser sponsor them. My dad was the one that got that sponsor.
Wow. I remember every week the vendors with all the beer going
exactly,
around peddling it.
Yeah.
And at the year end Christmas show, they were actually giving away beer to the audience.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I met Kato Kun Lee in Japan, and, you know, he was a really hell of a nice person, and I go, well, you know, believe it or not, but I met you back in the 80-something at Los Angeles, Jaco Plaza. Goes, dude, all I can remember from that is this one wrestler, I can't remember his name, but he filled up my bag with Budweiser's. I go, dude, that was my dad.
Yeah.
That was my dad.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and so anyways, yeah, you know, my dad had a real eye for everything, you know. And I remember my dad moving around and saying, okay, you know, he would go out there, and this is what I tell a lot of the guys, you know, go out there, look at the matches, you know, scout the people, look at the people, look how they wrestle. When you get a chance to wrestle them, you know what to expect, you know what to do. You know, not only that, look at the crowd, look at the people, you know, work with the ref, work with the people. You know, a lot of people think it's just going in there and screaming and yelling, but no, it's a whole different ball game. When I started working, I got around a lot, and I understand the business right away. It just clicked. It just like clicked. You know, so a lot of guys take a long time to just to process or to understand the concept of, you know, how, the difference or styles or whatever.
Yeah.
When you have TV time, you know, time is short. You got to remember camera angles. You got to remember this. Got to remember that. And I remember just going in there and just, you know, I had Everything came easy.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't struggle with a lot of the stuff.
Did you want to be a wrestler from the very beginning?
I never did want to be a wrestler.
Yeah,
I'll be straight honest.
How about your brothers? Your brothers weren't really.
My brothers actually, Principe and Dew, was not an age at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you remember, but back then, you still had the consumer affairs. You still had the Comisión de Boxeo y Lucha.
Yeah.
Okay, exactly.
State Athletic Commission. You had to get
licensed. So yeah, you had to get licensed every year. You had to go to the doctor, and you know, you had to be 18 years and over.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
My brother Gustavo was, I think he was barely turning like 15 when he debuted it back in 79.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but he was a big dude. You know, he was a big dude.
So was he able to just?
Yeah. He got away with his appearance, and I think fake ID. Remember, we used to live near Alvarado, so we had
the
hookup. Yeah.
Was the doctor named Bernhard Schwartz, the famous Bernhard
Schwartz?
Yes,
the big guy with a beard.
Yes, because I got my first wrestling license from him.
I did too.
And I remember sitting down and saying, oh, I wonder if my blood pressure is high, or it wasn't, but I was saying, oh, I wonder if everybody's going to seem good, but... When I looked down at his sheet, he had all the vitals already filled out for me. What's your name, kid? Kurt Brown. He took my blood pressure, and then he passed me.
Yeah, actually, you know, it was the same guy, and I remember the only person I guess he never passed was Golden Iron.
I remember Golden Iron.
Okay, he had issues with the high blood pressure.
Oh, really? It's like,
no, you can't.
Was that bad?
Well, Golden Iron, if I remember right, he was on some massive juice.
Oh,
I remember seeing him like, whoa, what is this guy putting in his Cheerios?
I know. Yeah, that's like the first big guy I ever seen, you know, in wrestling, you know. Really good friend, really good guy, really nice guy. Going down again to Jaco Plaza. I was a kid, and I remember everything like if it was yesterday, man.
Oh, those were great memories.
Yeah.
Every Sunday night at 5 o'clock, they never skipped weeks.
No.
It was happening, dude.
I think
almost 10 years they ran.
Yeah, actually, they ran. No, it was less. I wish it was 10, but they ran from 1978 till 1985.
Mm-hmm.
But 83 going into 84, it changed the owners,
mm-hmm.
the promotions. It was still called the same thing, except that Bendulion was not the promoter anymore.
Okay, well, okay. I actually remember the difference.
Okay, yeah, and it was Ramon Villanueva,
mm-hmm.
who took over. You probably remember him. He was the guy he was the other guy taking pictures all the time, skinny,
yes.
kind of tall, kid, Ramon Villanueva. So he started promoting.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in 83, my dad was the CEO. he was the guy in charge, cuz they had
He was a matchmaker.
No, no, no. Tenían una mesa directiva. Yeah, they had
a writing team.
They didn't have a writing team, but they had somebody that would take care of. My dad was a matchmaker.
Yeah, like an office. They had an office.
Yeah, they had an office. Basically, they did have an office, and they had certain people taking care of certain stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and Gil being the way he was, he always wanted to be, the head gaucho there. So, my dad was always cool with that. It goes to, my dad was the matchmaker for so many years. Mm-hmm. Since he started all the way till 83. And I remember Jesse Garcia took over my dad's spot.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, they had a big argument. And, ever since Jesse Garcia went there, he only lasted 1 year, and he brought the place down.
See, I always wondered what had changed, because remember how earlier I said, said the opening match.
Well, that's what changed. Yeah. They took my dad from office.
Yeah, because I remember the opening matches, they would be really solid hold-for-hold matches. Mm. And then I remember 1 week I came and the opening match was one long rest hold. And I'm like, whoa, what happened? Mm-hmm. Something changed here,
Yeah, and not only that, you could see the difference as far as the matches went.
Yeah.
You know, every match had a storyline, every match had... Mm-hmm. A sequence, and you could see this, Sunday by Sunday, when my dad was taken out, like I said, Jesse Garcia took over, and everything went just down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the promoter just bailed, and the place was out for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started promoting again, like the late 84 up until 85.
Oh. Now, didn't Hatco Plaza get bought by a church or something?
Yeah, they
like
got
that?
Bought by a church. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. And you know what the sad part about this?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say the name, but there was somebody that was really greedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want him to be offended, because I have a lot of care for this person. Yeah. He was really, really... Say the name, but you can cut it out.
Superboy, it's the podcast. Oh, you can tell us afterwards.
Yeah, tell us afterwards.
You can tell us
after
the podcast.
Yeah. All right, this person was so greedy that it came to the point where they could have bought the building.
Mm-hmm.
They were really doing really good. It was doing... The place was doing really good. They could have bought the building because they did come into conversations, and they had a chance to buy the building.
They just didn't.
They didn't.
Oh,
and
man.
The place was beautiful. Yeah. It had, how do you call it? Two floors. It was two. They had like. Dos salones.
Yeah, it was a two-story building. There was like a dance hall.
There were two dance halls.
Wow.
Oh, there was one downstairs?
There was one, yeah.
I never realized that.
Where the guys used to get dressed, it was another dance hall.
Wow.
Yes.
And it was huge. It was huge. And I remember that was a beautiful place. They had the wooden seats into the wall. And then they had just seats. As a matter of fact, when... Cosmos' sister-in-law was 15. Mm-hmm. Her quinceañera was down. Was in the vestidores place.
The first floor.
Oh, yeah.
The first floor. Yeah. And as you walked into the dressing rooms, there was like this, like this fountain chair was just round like that. You said, real beautiful. I used to love that building.
I love that building too.
And it had the grand stage with that nice picture. And it was
so beautiful. You didn't get to wrestle there at all.
You know what? That was my dream to wrestle there. I had dreams where I was wrestling at Hacko Plaza, but I never had a chance. Yeah,
but you were definitely part of the family. I mean,
oh, definitely.
Didn't you actually? Because I think Kurt might have mentioned this before, that you were one of the little kids that would get in the ring.
Yeah, actually, I remember my
and
brother.
You were actually better than the wrestlers.
My brother Gustavo had a mask versus mask match, which he won, and I remember Fantomas being my brother's second, and I was right there. I was cheering on my brother. It was a hell of a match.
Yeah.
And I remember my brother, he said, come on in. So I was all nervous. I went up into the middle of the ring and I pulled this guy's mask off and Dude, it was the world to me, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
That was so cool.
One thing I remember I loved, they would put these little creative twists into matches at Hatco Plaza. One of the things is whenever somebody lost a fall, his opponent would take him and chuck him out of the ring. Didn't matter if it was a face or heel. It was like tradition. You chuck your opponent out of the ring after you beat him. Each fall. And then the other thing I loved is when they had a hair versus hair match. I don't know if they did this regularly, but they would shave the guy's head, but they wouldn't shave it cleanly bald. They'd leave little clumps of hair. And then the next week he had to sell beer with his back haircut.
And one of my favorite matches was Los Relevos Chinos, where you had, you know, it was a 3-on-3. And then they would clear out, you know, a set of rows of chairs on each side. And they would put numbers.
The samurai match.
Yeah, samurai match. Yeah. We call them Relevos Chinos. So it was 1, 2, 3. And they were, it was these little, wood plates with a number 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, big boards. Wooden plywood boards.
And they would put the one. But the trick was that they would put like a rubber band. So every time they pulled on it, if you didn't pull it all the way, it would just bounce back. So you really had to pull it hard. And you had three guys on each side. So in order for to get the win the first round, you would have to go over the top and pull down the number one number.
Remember, there was a goalie in front of the boat.
There was a samurai with a belt.
Oh, jeez.
So he's going to, you know, he's going to keep you away from grabbing that number. He's gonna hit you with that belt. I had one of those matches. It was the most fun I ever had, but it was painful.
Yes.
That's a great idea.
A great match. At Hatco Plaza, that would be the match they had for their year.
They had it once a year.
Once
a year.
Would they like gimmick something like the winning team gets something out of it?
You just won. Yeah. Wrestling for the sake of wrestling. I loved is if you pulled the board off the wall, then the next thing is the captain of the opposing team had to get on his hands and knees and you busted the board off.
Yeah, you would get on his knees and you would bust it over his head. And everybody had a chance to do it.
That was
cool.
Every number would, after you grab the number, it would. You have to crack it on his head.
Yeah, the year-end shows at Hatco Plaza were amazing.
Another thing, you know, my dad, he always overlooked everything. He never overlooked nothing. He always looked at everything, and he was like one of the first persons that opened up a fund, you know, for people that got hurt.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, he actually opened up a bank account, and at first he was like taking, like I think like $1 or $2 off of every wrestler, and something from the door and something from the concessions. So you know he would gather this money if the money, you know, if somebody needed it, the money was there.
Yeah.
But with this money, he also did the dance at the end of the year.
Yeah,
he was the one organizing all that stuff.
Yeah. You guys had a dance at the end of the year.
Yeah, it was a cena,
like a trophy award.
Yeah, and everybody would get recognized. You would come in your suit and your mask. Oh, it was cool. So cool. I never got to. I remember by 83, 84, I was a teen. I was 13, 14, 15 at the time, and I remember my first dance I was going to go to, which I didn't. But I was looking forward to that because I don't think I have those pictures, but I have some cool black and white pictures where they, you know, and everything was catered. It was really nice where my dad and Gil are drinking out of this. I don't know if it's like it's a big cup like that, elongated like that, with a bunch of fruit and
wow,
it was really nice.
Yeah.
And they went all out, man. They went all out. And again, thanks to my dad, you know, because he was the one organizing all of that stuff.
Well, your dad was born for the business. You remember when I started wrestling, I was in opening matches. Mm. I was the curtain jerker.
Yeah.
But what never ceased to amaze me was after the match, your dad watched every match, not just the main events, and he would sit there and tell me what I needed to improve on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's not very many guys in your dad's position mm-hmm. bothered even watching.
Nowadays, they don't even watch the wrestling.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You know, yeah, the only thing they watch is who's coming in the door.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's true.
It's amazing because, I mean, it's not even... You could talk to somebody who promotes the show and they won't tell you. They won't...
Well, see, and again, you know, when my dad... You know, my dad said, you know, God rest his soul, he said, the last thing I want to do before dying
mm-hmm.
is promote again.
And he did.
Yes. You know, I wasn't there for the first show. As a matter of fact, I was in Japan at the time traveling. And, you know, when I came back, I asked him, so when is your next show?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I don't think there's going to be a next show. I go, why? Well, what's wrong? What happened? He goes, well, let me put it this way. I had three associates,
mm-hmm.
which was Dr. Muerte,
mm-hmm.
Acero Dorado, and your brother,
mm-hmm.
you know, who put up some money up front. And so, well, anyways, Sunday came. You know, you have to set up the ring. You got to put up the chairs. You got to make sure the place is clean. You got to make sure the concession, everything's there, and then we're going to sell this, sell that. You know, everything
mm-hmm.
has to be there. And yeah, you know, Dr. Marte came. He goes, hey, Chuy, you know, what about if you do this or if you do that? And, you know, he was there for a couple of minutes and he left.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and then when the guys came to wrestle, same thing. You know, hey, you know, maybe you should have done this, you should have done that.
Yeah.
But nobody
helped,
yeah. you know. And then by the end of the show, they wanted their money back. I go, dude, you know, I go, okay, well, I tell my dad, you know what, don't worry. Let's take these guys out of the picture, it's, you know, me and you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do you need? Okay, so I remember I went and I bought this little brother typewriter with prints and everything.
Right.
I made some flyers and, you know, just a handful of flyers to pass out. And then I went to the print shop and I got like 300 flyers. And I had Jose Luis
mm-hmm.
Go to La Opinion and put out, you know, at a last minute thing. You know, it has to be... You know, I had to be there by Monday, but, you know, they were cool. They were, La Opinion guys, you got to give them a lot of credit. They were really cool.
They always publicize local matches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well. You know how much they charge?
How much?
Zero.
What?
Yep.
Oh, I was wondering how they were, because I remember seeing advertisements for years of local wrestling shows in there.
Well, and again, you know, you remember La Oveja Negra?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had the contact with the people in La Opinion. So he was asking my dad for like $50.
That was like a major newspaper. It wasn't like
Yeah. That
was
and the guy said, "Oh, the guy charges me $50, you know, to
and he was charging
to advertise." And then later on he said, "Oh, you know, the guy said it's going to be $80 from now on." My dad said, "You know what? Right now, I don't mind giving it to you, but right now at this time."
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he got mad and he said, well, you know, so he didn't do it anymore. So I went down to where the building was right here on 9th Street. And, I don't know if it's still there or not on 9th Street and Olive. They had the building from the Opinion right there. So I went there and I remember I bought this, I think it was like a cognac bottle or a tequila bottle,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to give this guy, you know, hey, thanks for helping us out. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you and see if we could continue, if you could continue, you know, advertising the Lucha Libre, whatever. He goes, yeah, you know, dude, all you got to do is just write up your results and your program for next week. And there's only one catch. I go, what's that? That if I have events like basketball or boxing, you know, if that's the case, I'm not going to put your promotion.
Right.
But other than that, it's going to go on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, oh, well, how much? No, it's free.
Oh,
wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
because I remember for years seeing ads for Hatco Plaza and really good size ads, and I was like, wow, this is impressive. Now, Michinoku Pro, you've probably done more tours of Japan than any other independent wrestler here in the L.A. area. Tell us about your first tour there and how you kind of, kind of bonded with the whole crew in Japan.
You know, I remember my I remember talking to you a year prior to going to Japan.
Yes.
And I remember you telling me that they wanted 7 guys.
When Wally Yamaguchi was...
Exactly, and you had in mind of sending Piloto, Mercurio, Loverboy, Crazy Boy, my two brothers and myself.
Yes.
And then I remember you telling me that... Oh, no, that was it. I remember... And then the following year, I didn't hear from you until the following year. But I remember Platanito giving me a call, and he said, "Hey, guess what? I'm sending my brother, Piloto, and Mercurio to Japan." I go, "Oh, well, that's great news. Well, good for you. You know, that's cool."
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
And that was it. I go, "So what do you need?" "No, I just wanted to let you know." "Oh, okay, cool." And that was it. And then I guess he called me one more time, or he didn't call me at all. Till you called me,
mm-hmm.
and I remember, and it was getting like real close to the, like 2 weeks away from the Japan tour.
Yes,
I remember Kurt giving me a call. "So are you set? Are you ready?" I go, "For what? To go to Japan?" I go, "No, I'm not going to Japan." he goes, "Yes, it's
you."
That's
right. You thought we were kidding you. Right?
Yeah,
you
it's, we yeah.
It was a joke.
He goes, "No, it's going to be you, Piloto Mercurio." No, it's not me. It's Loverboy." He goes, "No, it's you." I go, "Well, Platanito called me and said that his brother's going." He goes, "Oh, no, he's not going." And then I guess you talked to him, and then he calls me up, and he goes, "Oh, guess what? My brother can't make it."
Oh, wow.
"You think you could go?" He goes, "You think you could go?" I said, "Yeah, I could make it." "Well, go hurry up." "I got the paperwork for you." He gives me the paperwork, and it says Superboy.
You should have had your name legally
changed.
Was that
Red Bastien?
My God. I still give him the props. You know, I didn't want to tell him. You know, I like Platanito. He's cool, man.
Yeah.
So anyways, I get the paperwork, and dude, I didn't even know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a passport.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know where the embassy, the Japanese embassy. I think I called you. You told me, didn't you?
Yeah, I told you where it was.
Yeah, it was on like on...
The thing that made me uncomfortable is they wanted you guys going there without working papers.
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad you did that, because, you know what a lot of guys do is that they were taking a boat to Japan, dude. It was taking them, like, forever. And they didn't have any working papers, man.
Oh, jeez.
My God. So that was one of the best things that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because, once you get your paper, or I went down there right away, really nice people. I filled out the paperwork and bam, bam, bam. And you have your itinerary. Here's my itinerary. Letter of guarantee. There's everything. Boom. And they just seal your passport right there and then.
Yeah. And it was really impressive, because the two that they kept bringing back regularly were you and Piloto. And it was funny, because before that, I think you chiefly wrestled Mexican style, maybe a little bit of American style, but this was a whole new scene for you. What was it like?
Yeah, you know what? It was a little bit intimidating going to Japan, because I had, at the time, two of the best local wrestlers, which were Piloto and Mercurio, and they had their fan club, and wow. You know, they were really, really working. They were going they were going in and out of TJ, and they were really good at the time. I wrestled Piloto back then like about 3 times, and every time we wrestled, we just turned it into a brawl.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like him. He didn't like me, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going in the plane and I went over to Piloto and I called, "Look, you know what? Let's put our differences aside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a big opportunity for all three of us. you know, let's go out there and really show what we have and, you know, put not only Mexico up high, but L.A., because you're yeah. from L.A. now. So it was okay. And I remember vividly the first day I got there, my first match. When we got there, Wally Yamaguchi picked us up. Jinsei, Wally, and there was another, I think it was Johnny Genji. And we picked up Beef Wellington Jr. We picked him up. We picked up Jiraiya.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was it. It was all for us four. We stayed at Wally's house. He showed us a few tapes of the guys. And, dude, we just kept looking at each other. These guys were fucking awesome, dude. I was like, oh my God, are we gonna wrestle these guys? Like, oh my God. I was blown away.
Yeah.
Literally, I was just blown away. I was. It came to the point where I don't think I'm up to their.
Well, I remember when Wally first asked me who were some wrestlers I could book locally, the first two that came to mind were you and Peloto, because I thought you were the two who I really thought could keep up with them.
Had you already seen the stuff already?
Oh, yes. Yes. And I just knew the whole gist of Japan wrestling compared
to
American wrestling.
Oh, that's how you went to Europe. Yeah.
And you know, I was mind blown, because I'd never seen them.
Yeah. Yes.
I was mind blown. I was like, oh, my God. I was thinking to myself, I don't think I'll... Well, it's going to be a nice experience. So...
You know, worst case, you wrestle Yoni Genjin a couple of times.
Well, dude, even he was good, dude.
I know.
Oh, he was like,
he did the
damn.
Comedy. He did the comedy stuff, though.
Yeah.
He could always get away with
but
comedy.
But no, back then, you didn't do comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
Back then, the guys with the comedy was...
it started progressing
Delphine,
towards the end.
Yeah, Delphine and Sasuke had a thing for comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we did the more serious and the wrestling and everything. So, anyways, I remember arriving at Morioka, and we took some pictures. There were some samurai outfits, pretty cool. I remember seeing Sasuke coming in with his tubas and his shirt. He didn't have a suit because he always wore a suit.
Yeah.
But that day, I guess, you know, that's his hometown, by the way.
Okay.
So, yeah, so he got there with he's talking on the phone. And, you know, he's talking on the phone. So back then, it was a big thing,
yeah.
You know, having a cell phone.
Cell phone was a
yeah,
luxury.
Oh, yeah. So I go, oh, look at this guy. He's young.
You're like, he's got a phone.
No, not only that, but he's young. You know, he's our age and stuff, you know. And, you know, he brought this the car with him. Down there, you can do that. You have this megaphone, and you're announcing the wrestling and blah, 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 whatever. I can't understand shit what they were saying, but, you know, we he goes, he came to the train station in a mask.
Oh, trip out.
He came with a mask. Hey, guys, put on your mask. We got to go.
Oh.
I go, what, is he serious, dude? I have to put on the mask. I go, I ain't gotta put no fucking mask on. Put your mask on, go. So we all put our mask on, and we're like, we're touring the city, dude, in our mask, in a car. So finally, they drop us off like three blocks away from the place, dude. We walk from there, and it's a shopping center.
Yeah.
Our first show was in a shopping center in the parking lot.
Oh, jeez.
Out in the parking lot. Yeah. So I remember walking through all the people looking at us, touching us, and saying all kinds of stuff. And I remember going up the escalator and, oh, my God. I said, okay. So finally, you know, we got to the place and we actually got dressed in the stairwell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were at the stairwell, and I remember I gotta open up my mind and take all this in, so I could never forget.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, I remember everybody. I remember Taka. I remember Johnny, everybody. I can't remember now. Right now, I can't remember, but I can remember everything. You know, as it happened. I remember sitting down over here, and every back then we used to have like a little ceremony where before the match everybody went up in the ring,
mm-hmm.
and I remember meeting Sato for the first time. So from that point on we clicked. He was like my twin brother I never had.
Sato. Wow.
Yeah, he was my age and we have the same birthday.
Sato, Dick Togo?
Yeah, Dick Togo.
Yeah.
And we have
just
to
making sure because I kind of heard Santo. No, Santo. It can't be Santo. It can't be Santo.
And so yeah, we clicked and we did the main event. Yeah. By the way, we did the main. It was me and Delphin versus Sasuke and Piloto.
Oh, Piloto. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember I thought I was going to do the first match.
Yeah.
So I got up, I got dressed pretty fast, and I'm anxious, I'm waiting. And then, you know, and then they brought the little paper with the thing, and it said ceremonia, because they eat the R's.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
An L.
Yeah.
And I go, what the hell is a ceremonia? It's, oh, everybody's going to come out right now, okay, whatever. While it was, you know, translating and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And so anyways, after the ceremony, I went out there. I watched every match. Mm-hmm. And that was just my style of scouting, mm-hmm. looking with
the But you're like, man, this is great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, like, wow, I had a blast. Yeah. Dude. I had a blast. I'm watching these guys doing moves I've never, ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, moving at 100 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God. You know, I ain't going to be able to keep up with these guys, man. And so anyways, when our time came, yeah, they introduced me. I jumped over the top, and I stood there for a couple of pictures. You had the press. You had everything. And, you know, he goes, ding, ding, ding. First round starts, and Sasuke and Delphin went at it. I said, oh, my God. Oh, I was in the corner like a little kid just enjoying myself, dude.
Uh-huh.
I was looking at him. I go, oh, my God. And everything was so nice, so crisp. So, dude, and finally, when me and Piloto went in there, they were the same way. Yeah. You know, they admitted it to us, mm-hmm. that they were the same way, looking at us, enjoying themselves. And right away, the first thing they said, oh, this is the Sasuke and the Delphin from LA.
LA. Yes.
That's the first thing they said. And it was mutual. And, you know, we had lots of fun. It was a great match. The only comedy thing I did, it's funny because it wasn't meant to be that way. I remember Delphin, I told Delphin to set him up. I was going to splash. I was going to do a splash.
Yeah, splash, huh?
And he put him like, right, really close to the rope,
mm-hmm.
and I tell him, no, dude, he's too close. Put him farther. Oh, it puts him all the way to the corner. I go, and I was embarrassed to get out, and they walked to the other side. I didn't want to do that. So I said, oh my God, what am I gonna do? I said, I know, I'll just jump and then jump again. For some reason, people love that, and they asked me to do it in every fucking match.
Oh, that's awesome.
They loved it. They wanted me to do that in every match. But we had a hell of a night, and I remember going to eat after that. They took us to a Yakiniku, Korean barbecue place.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to use the chopsticks. Piloto, like I said, Piloto and Mercurio were a little bit more, you know, they're older, they're more experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they knew how to eat with the sticks, they had that experience. They were out with the boss,
yeah,
talking, and you know. And I remember I was in the corner trying to fight with my food, and and I remember they were looking over and talking about me. And then I asked Piloto, hey, what were they saying? Oh, they think you're really good. You're great. I go, so, well, I don't think I'm great, but, you know. But after that, it was just like a match made in heaven, not with everybody, because I started to put my input. I saw a lot of potential in the guys,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they had bad habits. Bad habits of getting up.
The
rest was Japanese kids. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So they're still kids. I say kids because God damn it, Naniwa was like 13 at the time, you know, and Kaz Hayashi was, you know, he was. They were all really young.
Yeah.
Yakusiji, Hoshikawa,
mm-hmm.
they were kids, man. And they had, you know, because they practiced a strong style. They did, you know, a lot of stuff, and they were lacking a lot of real basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, you know, took over the classes before going to the arena, we have a lot of time. So we did go in and we did train. And I go, look, come here, you know, do this, do that, you know. And I just started telling them, you know, how to do the things. So from that point on, I was Maestro Superboy.
So, I remember after you had been touring there for, I think, about 2 years, Physico and I were watching a tape of a Michinoku match. Not one that you were in. It was a six-man tag, all Japanese guys. But they were doing the exact same, you know, style of a match that's done here in Los Angeles, Lucha Libre, and we're saying, that's Superboy, that's his influence, and we were jazzed.
Yeah, I influenced a lot of the guys. You know, they had their own style, which was really nice, really cool. I know who picked up a lot of my style was Kasayashi.
Mm-hmm.
He picked up a lot of my style. We were really good friends. And I remember I've seen him again when he was in WCW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he came over to the house. And I go, next time you come, let me know. Because he likes pozole. Because he lived in Mexico for like a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, oh, I love pozole. I go, oh, that's cool. You know, I have my wife, you know, fix you up, you know, some pozole next time you come. Really, really nice guy. Really good friend. He was like one of the guys that I really like. And I remember he came over, and I picked him up. I took him to the house, and we just started talking and reminiscing. And he told me, you know what? I remember you the first time you came, and I remember you pulling me to the side and telling me a lot of stuff, you know. At the time, it didn't sink in. I really didn't understand. Now I understand. And I thank you for all that advice.
Wow.
Because it's helped me throughout these years.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming from a person, he's a big name in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, coming from him and just telling me that, you know, that made my day. And
you were mentioning you were close with Sato Dick Togo.
Yeah, yeah. Again, yeah, We had almost the same style.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember tagging up with him, and we didn't even. I'm serious. We didn't even have to yell or tell each other. Just we knew what to do.
You can just improvise.
Exactly.
Yeah, because he's another guy who's just.
Yeah, we could like he knew if I set him up, I was just run, boom, he was there, bam. You know, he had already the guy set up, and we just clicked. You know, another one was Taka.
Yeah,
Taka Michino. He had a lot of bad habits too. Like when he still does that. You know, where he lands and he gets up like this. You know, he gets up like this.
Yeah, straight.
Yeah, I go, dude, someone's gonna come and push you. You're gonna land on your butt.
Yeah,
I go, stop doing that. But it's a hard habit to break.
Yeah,
and he still does that.
Yeah, yep. That's why I said, you know what. It's really a hard habit to break because you've been doing all your wrestling life. Yeah. So I'm not going to change it. Just keep standing up like that. But I had a really good relationship with everybody, dude. Everybody.
Well, you did over.
Everybody took care of me. Everybody respected me. I respected everybody. And I didn't have a problem with anybody.
And I mean, you did over 20 tours there. I mean, you...
I did almost 10 years.
Wow.
Yes.
10 years nonstop. And,
because your last tour was the right after the Super J Cup, wasn't it? Or was it?
Yeah, yeah. I did one more after the J Cup. I did one more show.
Yeah.
And I think you were usually Superboy, but you had three other identities.
Yeah, yeah. I remember Dick Togo wanted me to tag up with him. Because at the time he was a babyface, Sato. His name was Sato, which in Japanese is sugar.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Asuka.
I never knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Sugar man.
Yeah. So he wanted us to go by the name of. He came up with a gimmick of the mask, and it was Leon Guerrero.
Yes.
It was a pretty cool outfit, like a tiger and stuff like that. Like a lion. A tire.
A hybrid.
Yeah. It was a liger.
Yeah. So, anyways, he did like one tour. He did the gimmick, and then on the when I came, I had an outfit already, and I did it. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
It didn't work out. I wasn't too happy about it. I still did it, you know. And then that was the first one. And then for the mass tournament for 94, they actually the referee came out with a convict gimmick.
That's a great gimmick.
Which awesome. Went over very good. Yeah. Very good, yeah.
In fact, you did when they gave you the convict gimmick, I think I remember you telling me you didn't know the history about who the convict
was. Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that there was a convict like back, what's it, the 50s or the 60s?
60s, Tiger Mask comic and the convict.
But there was actually this one American wrestler used to wrestle as a convict.
Plowboy Frazier.
Yeah.
Wrestled under a hood in Los Angeles.
Almost something similar to...
It was the exact same outfit.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
So I didn't know much about the history. I knew that he was real...
How funny, because I thought they were doing it after the character in the Tiger Mask comic.
Well, they did. They did. They did it after. Yeah. They did it after that. But the first picture I saw when they were promoting me was a picture of that guy.
Who was like about six foot five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that dude was huge.
And you know, I come into the picture, and I was like, "Hey, this is not the same guy." And
did you get to keep the outfit?
You know what? They gave it to me, but I gave it back.
Oh no way!
Yeah.
You could have worn it right now, man.
I know. I would have been my pajama. I give it.
I order you to fly back and get it back from them.
I brought it. It was in my drawers for a long time.
Yeah.
And the last time I went down there, I just took it and left
it. You should have sold it on eBay, man.
Oh, you could have made some money.
But it was a thick outfit. And I remember it was summertime. It was so hot. It was so hot. I was just dying in it. But, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. And then, you know, I try to change my style a little bit more American style, more slow. But come on, you don't fool the people, man. Because that body. But still, I did change it up. I have a match with against Suzuki. We did a 1-on-1, and you could tell the difference. I'm not, you know, running at 100 miles per hour.
Was that the one where you're carrying him in that crate?
No, that's a.
Oh, that was funny.
Willie started doing that with Johnny Genji. And I thought, oh man, that's not. But dude, you really got to speed it. I'm getting tired. I do it every day. And once I got in that damn card, and he would literally just throw you, man. Sometimes you will fall on your side, or if you were going to the ring and you had to put your feet up or your hands.
The first time I ever saw a wrestler slam another wrestler onto that hand cart and roll them across into the wall, I thought, I'm amazed ECW's never done this.
You know, and Beef Wellington Jr., he's one of those natural strong guys.
Yeah.
Dude, I swear to God, you know, and I would do this to all the foreigners that would come. He goes, hey, Willie wants to know if you want to train with him. You know, and it happened to me when I first met him. He goes, hey, you want to train with me? Yeah, let's go for it. But dude, that guy, it's like, you know, he knows a lot of submission moves, dude. He will literally grab you in a submission, ankle lock or an arm bar or something. And he's like this far away from snapping your bone, dude. And the more you say, that's it. He would do it more.
Man.
Wow. And he was just that type of person. Really hell of a nice guy. Really cool. He took his shit seriously.
How about all the Mexicans that went to with Michinoco Pro?
Well, yeah. I told him, hey, he won. Yeah, yeah. I remember when Duraco used to wrestle as Bat Boy, and then Duraco, and then Histeria at the end of AAA. I go, hey, he wants to know if you want to trade with him. I already knew, man. He went in there. He's like, "Oh, you motherfucker, you want to kill me?" Yeah, but Willie was just naturally strong, and I heard rumors that Ken Shamrock thought he was stiff.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Lord.
So yeah, he's real deal. He's a real deal, and poor Joe Kimble, man. He had to wrestle him every day.
Oh, Perro Russo.
Yeah, Perro Russo. There you go.
Really nice
guy,
though.
Dude, every day he would beat his bloody, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember Willie would just grab anything from the floor and hit him over the head. There was a bottle in there. He cracked his head open. And
were we talking about Biff Wellington or Wellington
Wolf? He's calling himself Biff Wellington.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah, he's the same name.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I'm confused too, so don't ask me again. Don't ask me again. So anyways, and just going in with there, you know, this guy was just, like I said, naturally strong.
Yes.
He would overpower you like nothing, man.
Because I remember Russo used to talk about him nonstop.
Oh, my God.
He brought up that name.
He goes, Pedro Russo, you say, there's only two wrestlers that I know. One of them is this guy, and the other one's Fit Finley. Oh, man. But, we became really good buddies, really close, really good. And I remember the first encounter I had with Willie was a battle royal. And I'm thinking to myself, this ain't gonna hurt me. We're friends. We're good friends.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I have another instinct that I felt something, you know, behind me, and I turn. He's like a freight train, dude. Just rah, coming with a clothesline, dude. I remember looking at him and just ducking. Boom! And he got me like mid forehead, like this. He almost ripped my mask off.
Jesus.
And then I turn and he's coming back again. And I remember I go, I gotta get this guy. And then he's going like this, and I run and I drop him. Boom! Patadas de canguro, both feet on the back. And he goes forward. He's tumbling like that. And then he turns and I come in with another drop kick. Bam! You wanna kill me? Like, I wanna kill you. Once I got him in the ropes, dude, every single person came over to help me throw him out of the ring. I'm not kidding. And he's never been tossed out of the ring, especially over the top.
Right.
Yeah.
So his both hands are like this. He's grabbing on to dear life. And I remember when I came at it, Adam, he kicked up his foot like that and just brought it down. And I grabbed the foot. But he almost took out my shoulder, dude. He's strong and he could kick.
The real thing.
Oh, yeah. And I remember grabbing his foot and I couldn't take him over. He's a big dude. He's heavy. And like I said, when everybody saw, everybody came in. And he goes, no, don't push me. I'm going to fall on my head. And he's crying like a little. I've never seen this guy so big and strong cry like a little baby, man. And I finally got him over. But he never let go of the ropes.
Yeah.
He went over. He wanted to come back in the ring and kill me, dude. I swear to God. I go, yeah, cabrón, yeah. Get out of here. He stood there for almost all the match waiting for me to get out.
Wow, he was waiting for
you. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that was the first time. The second time, he teams up with, Jerry Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
He teams up with Jerry Lynn, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's going to be a cool day, and I team up with this Japanese kid, and next thing you know, these two guys want to get me, man. I'm Jerry and Willie. What the hell? But I had a chain. I had the chain.
Yeah,
grabbed the fucking chain and started. Come on, fuckers! Come on! Boom! I hit Wally over the head. Bam! Oh! And then Jerry comes out and I hit him with it. And I roll out of the ring, and Willie starts chasing me, literally chasing me around the ring, dude. And I remember he did caught up to me. And he just threw me like a rag doll. And he got on top of me. He was choking me, dude.
Damn.
He was literally choking me. And I remember I was like this. I was seeing blurry at the time, dude. And he wouldn't let go. I'm telling you, he would not let go. And I remember out of desperation, I started just grabbing stuff from the floor. And I grabbed the bag. And I went, bam! I hit him on the side. And he falls over. And I roll out of him. Rolled out of the way, and he went on his back, and I just threw a senton right there. Bam!
Sweet.
And then I get up, and he gets up, and he starts chasing after me, dude. And there was this, like, this blackboard right there, and I grabbed it, and I threw at him. He's, you want to kill me? You want to kill me, yo? You know? I go, dude, what if you trying to kill me, cabrón? Yeah, but he was just... We were the best of friends, dude.
I was gonna say, did you guys go out drinking later that night?
Yeah, we did. He was so cool. He knew every time we went. You know, he knew every town. Awesome. He was really cool. He was the only guy that showed me around. You know, Japanese people, they're not that. What's that word I want to use? Social. Hospitably. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I can't say it.
Hospitable.
Hospitable. There you go. like for instance, if when the guys come over here, I would take them out. Yeah, you know, yeah. Show them the city. No, these guys weren't.
Right.
They got to the hotel. And that's it. They went out. Did their thing. Never called you. And the thing is that, you know, believe it or not, there's a lot of racism in Japan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, but it's kept, you know.
Yeah, I've heard of, like.
You know, I remember the first time we all went out, we tried to go into this bar, and they were just leaving, oh, dame guy jeans, no, guy
yeah.
jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to have a guide or a Japanese person
with you.
Go with you. And it doesn't work all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
Wally showed you some good times though, didn't he?
Oh my goodness, Wally. Hey Katsuki, what are you doing? You know Wally, man. I wanna be what I'm gonna do. I'm asleep, dude. What the hell? Nah, get up. Come on, let's go.
His American dialect was just like he was born.
Yeah, if exactly.
You're speaking in Japanese, then hey Kurt, you son of a bitch, what's going on?
You and he has a great voice. He sang San Francisco. Oh yes. My god. He just sang the shit out of it.
Oh, dude. You guys karaoke?
Yeah, we were karaoke. We were with this. Me and Piloto were just grabbing on this lady.
Oh,
we were. Well, he was singing, was just messing around, and but yeah, he goes, oh, I want you guys to sing Bésame Mucho. People started walking out. I go, damn, me and Piloto are the worst singers ever, dude. But Wally has that really nice voice.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised. I was very surprised. And, you know, you see Wally, you don't give 2 cents for him. He's like this tall, bow-legged, you know. But he's cool. He goes, I remember I had a chain, and I was swinging it. And you know he was our partner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he walks into the motion of the, and I caught him, dude.
Damn!
And the chain spins around his head, and then it stops and hits him right in the forehead. Oh, you son of a bitch! It hurts, but I can't sell it. Oh man, it was so funny, man. He was a hell of a guy. He goes, dude, whatever you want. You want to drink, you want to eat, whatever you guys want, company pays. Money's not an option.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Well, was his house the most fun place to crash at?
You know what it was. You know, it was a 2-story house. Mm-hmm. You know, not like you expect to see a house here, a wooden house.
A tall, skinny house.
Yeah, there you go.
It was a trip.
Tall, skinny house. And then in the basement. You know, that's where we slept. Mm-hmm. They, he pulled out, you know, just a bunch of, I guess, like pillows. Yeah, it wasn't pillows, but, you know, they had those, we call them petates in Mexico. It's like one of those, like, straw.
Like a straw mat.
Yeah, there you go. So we crashed there. It was really great. Wally was the best host, you know.
Oh, he was fun.
Yeah, he was really fun. And he had twins. He's a twin, you know that, right?
Yes.
And he, at the time with the lady, he I don't know if he's, but he had a little baby girl and 2 boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was so cool.
He was a good guy.
Did you ever see the twin?
Yeah, twins. Yeah, they were I think like 1 year old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They were both 1 year old, and I remember he, dude, I'm telling you, he was like the only guy that every place we went, he would take me. To drink,
mm-hmm.
just to have fun, because I don't know, for some reason he enjoyed my company, dude.
Really?
And we would go out and drink and have fun and mess around, and you know we just
clicked.
yeah. But Piloto, you know, well, I think it was a like language barrier.
Yeah,
you know, Piloto was, you know, his English was like really, his accent was really heavy, and he doesn't really understand much, and he wants to talk Spanish all the time, so. You know, but yeah, he did, you know, I would call him, hey, let's call Piloto. Bring that cocksucker over here. That was his famous word. And we would go out and have a blast. The first time we went to Japan, after a show, we went to this like a bar restaurant. Well, there were all bar restaurants, for crying out loud. And it was this really cool place where they had this big square table, and you sit on the floor, and so we, you know, everybody's drinking. You know, they bring the sake, they brought the beer, they brought all kinds of stuff, they brought all kinds of food. We're eating, and we're having a blast. And I remember I said, I want to use the bathroom. So I went to the bathroom. At the same time, there was this young boy. I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name. But he was like the slave.
He was like the new kid on the block.
Yeah, poor kid. Yeah. So anyways, he walks with me over to the restroom. And then Wally comes behind me. And as we're exiting the bathroom, there's this drunk guy that's in the restaurant, but, you know, they're eating on the other side because we had like a little private section, and then this guy, he grabs him by the neck, he starts shaking him, and then he slaps him, and he say, "Oh, pro wrestler," and this and that, and then because Wally had already left, and I told Wally, "Hey, dude, this guy," and then here comes Wally, and grabs the guy and starts telling him shit. And he slaps the shit out of the guy.
Really?
And then here comes Sasuke. And then he grabs the guy and he starts talking shit to him and he slaps the shit out of him. And then we're all looking like that and the guy just, And then he walks away. And then we go in there, we lock the door and we're all right there. Everybody's looking at us. Everybody's looking at each other. And but it's just laughing, dude. We're all laughing, which is what happened, dude. And then next thing you know, we ordered more beers, we ordered more sake. We broke every dish in that place. We were pissing out the window. Everybody was just drunk, dude. Yeah. Everybody was laughing at what happened. I remember we left that place like around 3 in the morning. 3 or 4 in the morning, I can't remember, man. And we just walked to the hotel. I remember, I swear to God, I felt like if I laid down and I woke back up. I remember that I bunked with Piloto that day. And dude, when I opened up my eyes, everything was just spinning, man. Everybody was like asleep. Every match was horrible then.
Oh, jeez.
The only person that didn't drink was Mercurio. But everybody else everybody else got bombed.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I was funny because we started just cracking up. Because, you know, they slapped the shit out of that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah, it was...
Now, first few years you were wrestling, you know, it was mostly local guys. Do you remember the first time you wrestled... like somebody who you grew up watching and looking up to, and
big star.
Well, you know what? Actually, the first time we went, like we were the only guys, foreigners. We were only the only foreigners.
Oh, I mean, like actually, no, like here, like here, like when you were a rookie.
Oh, okay.
In LA.
Okay. Well, actually, I guess everybody. Yeah, I was such a fan of everybody here that, you know, even my even my first match, I was honored to wrestle the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
Santiago as my partner was a big deal. Wrestling the following week, Al Murrieta, Gordy Chavez, that was a big deal. Murrieta was one of my idols. I grew up watching him, and it was just an honor to wrestle him. I could say a wrestler that I wanted to wrestle, because I was a big fan of his. I watched him throughout when I was younger, and I thought he was one of the fastest wrestlers
ever.
Is
that Kurt Brown?
aside from Kurt Brown.
The clumsiest, the fastest, not
was,
the clumsiest.
It was Felino.
Felino,
oh, yes.
And I said, I want to wrestle him one day.
Yeah.
And yeah, the time came. It was... I think he was wrestling as Galeno.
Mm-hmm.
Al Murrieta Jr.
Yes.
He was wrestling as Al Galeno and Capitan Oro and myself versus Super Porky, Felino, and Corsario de la Plata.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I remember I as soon as he jumped, I jumped, dude. Boom, I went in there. And we locked up and we threw each other. And then he came, he grabbed the leg, he pulled it, he covered, I threw it. Pulled the leg, covered. I as soon as I went, I did the head spring, and he was impressed. And then he got up with a nip up, and we were like going back and forth, but at a speed that was like, it was like watching a damn match and fast forward. You know, it was you know, and he was having fun. I was having fun. He goes, "Fuck, let's do that again. Come on." And we were talking, and we're going at it. And after the match was, I go, he was really impressed. He just told me, "Oh man, I'm, you know, that was a great match." He was impressed.
He is such an awesome worker.
Yeah,
that whole family is so talented.
Yeah, and he was one of the persons that I was looking forward to wrestle. And I said, I hope I have a chance to wrestle him. Another person was Phil Mascaras.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, just because of the
no, not only that, but you know what, you gotta give props where the props are due. I know a lot of people. I remember Conan talking shit about him in the win, about how he hip tossed him, how he backdropped him, mm-hmm. how he. I go, dude, I want to see you talk right now. Mm-hmm. I want to see somebody, upcoming name, wrestling you right now. See what you know. And I still give Mil Máscaras a lot more props than what he deserves.
Yeah,
you know, and come on, you know, it's a big difference of ages. You know, Conan's not even wrestling anymore.
Yeah,
he's just about as fucked as I am. So you know,
we should have the two of you wrestle each other.
I know. Let's see, the winner gets a new hip. and I remember he was talking smack, and I remember when I wrestled Máscaras, we wrestled and everything after the show, after the match, I grabbed the mic. And I told him, you know what, thank you. It was a truly honor to wrestle you. You know, you're a person that has traveled the world, that knows his way around the ring. Mm-hmm. And it was just an honor. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And it is. And it is, you know, a lot of people, oh, man, always the same spot. Always. But, dude, if you just look a little bit, if you only had a little bit of the experience that he had, you know, it's just mind blowing, dude. It's just,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he, you know, I've always given him his props, dude.
Very cool.
You know, a lot of people, he's this, he's that, he's no good. No, he is all that and much more. And another person that it's really good.
You might pause it for a while.
Another person, his brother, Dos Caras, he's exceptionally also a really good wrestler.
I remember that because I remember, was that the mass tournament where you worked with him in Michinoku?
Yes, we were.
Tell us about that because I remember you were really impressed with him.
Oh, yeah.
After the knocking.
Stop hammering out there.
I remember everybody made a big deal when he arrived. He had a one-on-one match with Arigato Romero.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying thank you. Arigato Romero.
he just saw him again.
I just saw our...
Oh, really?
Yeah, he saw
2 weeks ago in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow. So he had a match with him, and everybody made him... He's big in Japan.
Yes.
He's big in Japan. And I remember meeting him. We got along really good. We talked. He was really cool. It was really cool with me. As a matter of fact, I seen him at Anaheim, like in 2002 or 2003. Mm-hmm. He was with his son. He introduced me to his son.
Mm-hmm.
Really, they were both really cool. He goes, "Oh, he's a good friend of mine. Great wrestler, whatever." So we shook hands, and you know, it was pretty cool. But even his crazy brother Psicodelico, you know, a lot of people, you know, he's when he was young, he was stiff, he was this and that, whatever, but dude, you know, I always give that respect, especially when it's a big name. Another wrestler I got to wrestle in Tijuana was Javier Gusano Yanes.
Yeah. Oh, yes,
and my respects. My respects. I
He's a no horrible, problems. He's huh? a horrible host. He has his own wrestling show.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Huh? Turn that off.
Okay. Totally.
And let me see another person. Yeah, well, actually, it was Mascaras. Oh, another person I wanted to wrestle and I got a chance to. And we just clicked, had a hell of a time. And afterwards, he just came up. He came up to me and said that he hadn't had that much fun in a long time in a match. Mm-hmm. And again, it was like another encounter with Delino. We went at it. I go, okay, let's do that again. This is it. And we went. We just went back and forth. You're not even gonna believe who it is. Liger.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know you worked with Liger.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I worked with him and it was really cool. And again, you know, going back to the 80s, watching, because after, you know, after Tiger Mask, mm-hmm. he was the next big thing.
Yes.
And watching it, I remember you gave me a video, a Japanese video, mm-hmm. and I was just mind blown by Liger when he did the Shooting Star Press.
Yes.
Yeah.
I go, oh my God. And actually, I knew of the wrestlers of Japan thanks to Kurt, because he gave me a bunch of tapes mm-hmm. from over there that I've never seen.
Right.
And if I hadn't had these tapes, I wouldn't even know who a lot of these people are. Yeah, and you know, I always did my homework in Mexican wrestlers and, you know, a couple of Japanese like Hamada, mm-hmm. Asai, who were the names.
Ooh, yeah, in Mexico. Yes.
Yeah, Satoru Sayama, who was the original Tiger Mask, but didn't know much, you know. I didn't know who Baba, like, Gigante Baba was. Yeah, right. I knew him because he went out of Mexico, and Inoki, you know, mm-hmm. who doesn't know.
Misawa.
I didn't know Misawa. I didn't know a lot of the other names. And
the All Japan women.
Yo, man, I knew it because of him.
Yeah,
like, tapes.
Yeah,
and I was in, and I met him. I met most of the Japanese women actually here in the States when they wrestled.
You?
Yeah, yes. Bull Nakano came wrestle. I don't know where, like in 94, 95.
The Peace Festival.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. So I want to go pick up Sasuke, I think, at the hotel that we're all there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was in Japan, I went to go check some of the women's wrestling matches. And they were pretty cool. I took some pictures with them. Mm-hmm. I had some pictures with a girl wrestlers. And they were pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
We want to thank you for taking the time to do this interview. Always fun talking to you back.
Oh, man.
Old school lucha, new school lucha, anything lucha. Thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll be back hopefully really soon with another edition of Lucha World.